calling. Now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania has bitten the dust. London calling. See, we ain't got no swing except for the ring. Good evening, good afternoon, and good morning to all our listeners globally around the world. Cottage Talk, I'm Emilio Dinello, and I'm hosting on behalf of Russ Goldman, who's taking a well-deserved break with his family. So welcome, everybody. It's a pleasure to be doing this show, and thank you, Russ, that you've invited me to host the show on your behalf, and hopefully you're having a fantastic time away with your family in sunnier climes. In tonight's show, we'll be covering off the dismal and woeful performance against Rotherham a couple nights ago and also previewing the Blackpool game tomorrow. In addition, we have two new features on the show, so please do stay tuned for more details. Without further ado, I can see we have our two co-hosts on the line. First of all, we've got Mr. David Hurley. David, are you on the line?
Good evening, Amelia. How are you doing? Nice to be back, and good luck on your debut show.
Thank you very much. Hopefully I'm in the hands of God, having to pray that the Skype connection and Blog Talk Radio don't have any connectivity issues. But I'm certainly looking forward to doing a show with yourself and Joe. And we've got a lot to cover off in, unfortunately, a short space of time. We're on that for an hour and a half this evening. But, yeah, we've got lots to cover off. So nice to have you on the show, David. Let me get in Joe as well. Joe, I believe you're on the line as well. Joe, can you hear me?
Hello?
Hi there, Joe. I can hear you very faintly in the background. Can you hear me? Can you hear me fine?
I can hear you, yeah. It's echoing a bit. So I'll try again.
Okay, please do, Joe. I'll see you shortly. Thank you. So, David, obviously, Joe's just having a few teething issues with the Skype connection, as always. Let's kick off. Obviously, we've got a busy agenda today, so I do want to cover off the dismal performance against Rotherham on Wednesday night. And, you know, again, I'm not sure there's many positives to talk about, but nonetheless, let's actually go through that analysis. Let's dwell on, if there are any positives, let's talk about those. So first and foremost, disappointing results. Woeful performance. What else do you want to add? What are your opening thoughts on the game, your executive summary of the game, David?
Yeah, I think dwelling on it is probably not... We don't want to be doing that too much. It was pretty dismal. Even Kit, in his interview with Sarah, said that the second half was better than the first half, and that really wasn't very difficult, was it? I mean, the first half... The first half has got to be the worst half of football I've seen at Fulham, certainly this season, and maybe for other seasons as well. I mean, it was just so disjointed. We couldn't string two passes together. There was no drive. We made Rotherham look like Bournemouth. I tweeted that out. They actually looked like a good footballing side. They were using the ball much better than us. Second half, there was a very slight improvement. He switched McCormack and Ruiz in positions, and it worked a little bit, and then he changed, obviously. Hoogland came on for Tunnicliffe, and perhaps we were a little bit more cut and thrust going forward, but the standard of football was still awful. I mean, the fact that we got something out of the game is actually a miracle, because we should have been dead and buried. Well, at least after about 3 minutes, they had three good chances to score, and they scored the third one, and it could have easily been more. There was a save from Battinelli, and they hit the post as well. We should have been dead and buried at half-time, really, and it was very fortunate we got something out of the game, but that doesn't really excuse what an awful performance it was, once again, against a team from below us in the league.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's there's a horrible stat that, in effect, you know, the seven games that we've played to date this season against the teams below us, we've yet to win a game. You know, we've either drawn or lost against the worst three or four teams in the division, which is a disgrace. And like you've said, I can't recall a first half performance with nothing eventful to even note from a Fulham perspective. You know, Rotherham weren't particularly great. They attacked. They had a bit more energy, maybe a bit more purpose. But like you said, we made them look like the best team under the sun, and there was an opportunity there again to kill the season off, get the 3 points, rebuild for next year. But you know, unfortunately, we did what we're renowned for doing, is dropping points and not winning crunch games. So extremely disappointing, extremely woeful, and you know, I've run out of adjectives in terms of that performance. Each time we keep saying it can't get any worse, and then we see a Rotherham team 5 years ago who were fourth tier. We were in the Europa League quarterfinal, semi-final this time 5 years ago, and now we're literally 2 points away from each other. It's just an absolute disgrace. So, but let me just get Joe back on the line. So I see Joe is connecting. So let me invite him back in. Joe, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you very distantly, very faintly, but I can hear you. Can you?
Okay. Well, I'll continue as best I can. I haven't been able to hear the opening question, but I get the idea, and I agree with everybody else that it was an awful performance. First half especially. Second half didn't get much better. And basically we were controlled very easily by Rotherham, and I thought, you know, first half I couldn't. I bet they thought that must have been the easiest first half they've had this season, really. Mm. Yeah.
Exactly.
We were bullied throughout the pitch. Yeah, it wasn't pretty football that they played, but they didn't have to be have control over us. And it was an abysmal performance. There's been so many this season, but that has to be one of the worst, if not the worst.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. Obviously, the three of us were there in the stadium on Wednesday night, and it just felt that, I've been saying it for a while now, for the last 2 or 3 months, it just doesn't seem like the players are playing cohesively or playing for the manager. And I think again that was that was their mode on Wednesday. I didn't see there was any shape. It had no purpose, no energy. McCormack, who, as we know, does his best to make things happen, is always our most creative player and the most dangerous player. But again, at times, there was just lack of desire, lack of purpose. And players weren't playing in their positions. Balls were going loose. Balls were being wasted. Rotherham had more energy. Maybe they had the fear of the 3 points deduction that could hit them in the back of their minds, knowing that they needed nothing less than a win. But notwithstanding that, you know, the performance, you know, like you said, there's no more adjectives to describe how poor a performance we had. So disappointing. We're still hanging in there. We're still, we're still relying on other teams to continue dropping points. But, you know, how much further will our luck run? You know, that's my fear. We've had two home games to kill the season off, and we failed to do that. 2 points out of six. Not the end of the world, but could have been a lot more. And we could have been having this conversation, feeling more relaxed, speculating around what the next steps are from a manager perspective. But unfortunately, we're still having to look over our shoulders and hope that we can get a result from the Blackpool game tomorrow. So we're all consistent here. Poor performance. Doesn't spring to mind when we last played as poorly as we did. But we have to move on now and not dwell on the past. So, Joe, I'm going to sort of talk. Let's look at the starting lineup. So, the Wigan performance, there were possibly a few more positives there than there were against Rotherham. But Kit did make some changes there. Hopefully off the back of pressure from the fans, especially after his negative lineup against Wigan a week ago. So when you saw the lineup being announced, any surprises there? What were your thoughts? Were you hopeful when you saw that lineup?
Yeah, foolishly, I was quite hopeful because I thought it was a more attacking midfield with Guthrie coming in Yeah, I just thought it was. It looked a better, more stable and balanced side going out. Ruiz was starting as well, and I had hopes compared to the Wigan lineup that was more attacking and more progressive looking lineup. But look what happened.
Again, you know, my concern I saw was the bench. I thought the bench looked. It's too defensive, in my opinion. Again, you've got five of the seven players on that bench who was either a reserve goalkeeper who plays in his beloved pyjamas and four defenders stroke defensive midfielders. You know, there was two forwards. Where were our creative midfield? You know, David, we spoke yesterday and raised a valid point around Fofana's disappeared off the face of the earth. Roberts, obviously, his season's over as far as we're concerned. So, your reaction, David, when you saw the lineup. Any thoughts, any concerns, any gaps?
Well, I must admit, I thought that it did look a lot more balanced. And when I saw it, I thought we're going to be back to the diamond. And I know the diamond has been the bane of our season at times, but you know, perhaps with someone like Husband, who's a better attacking fullback, the diamond may be a bit more effective. And I thought we had three good people in, you know, a solid central midfield, and maybe Ruiz can pick that off a bit. But then they didn't start like that. They ended up playing something different. So they started, in fact, with McCormack playing left midfield and Tunnicliffe on the right, Guthrie and Park in the middle, and Ruiz was playing just off Matt Smith. And it just didn't work whatsoever. For whatever reason, it didn't work. And, you know, I'm going to hold my hands up here. I know Russ is going to be listening. You know, and I've been saying for weeks, let's try Tunnicliffe on the right of midfield because he can hopefully protect the right back better and he can get forward. But he did absolutely nothing, Tunnicliffe, unfortunately. He was useless in that position, at least on Wednesday. And when you look at the bench, we had not one player who could put the ball and run, and that was the problem. We had no players who would run at them with pace. I since found after the match, I spoke to Ross McCormack, and he told me that Kakanicic was injured, had a knee injury. Roberts obviously isn't injured, because he's played for the under-21s today. Fofana's become the new Lord Lucan, and he's disappeared off the face of the earth. And that was a problem. We had no one on the bench. And we've talked about this on shows before about Plan B. And, you know, we've said that, you know, much as we like Matt Smith's qualities and things, there isn't really a Plan B to Matt Smith. And then when you have a midfield like this, Rotherham were running at us. They were putting the ball down and they were running at us. And they were creating space by pushing us back. And we had no one to do that. So not to have Patrick Roberts on the bench or someone who could at least do something different, you know, it was a bit criminal, really. And so, you know, we ended up replacing, you know, a midfielder with basically a fullback in chasing the game. And yes, we did get back into the game ultimately. But now, what sort of situation is that when you're relying on someone who was picked as a right back to come on and change the game? So clearly, whilst the initial lineup didn't seem bad, the way we lined up didn't really work. And of course, after half time, they ended up switching McCormack back to his central position next to Smith, where they worked together. But then we found Brian Ruiz in a kind of an unusual left midfield position where really he had very, very little influence on the game whatsoever. But there was no one else who really could do that. We had no one else to change it around with. So, you know, it was a few injuries, yes, but also, you know, kit selection and Plan B or lack of Plan B was the issue. So it just really was a shambles, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you said there, guys. And the problem is, you know, you've got a manager there who's, tinkering with the team. You know, again, we used to love when, you know, Ranieri was tinkering for our beloved neighbours across the road. But, you know, we've got Guthrie came back in for the game and, yeah, didn't really do much for me. I was excited to see him on the pitch, seeing this is an opportunity for him potentially to seal a long-term move. But didn't really see him in the game. Tunnicliffe, you know, everyone knows I'm not his biggest fan, but, you know, he had a better game against Wigan. He was one of our stronger players last week, but offered very little. Obviously, wasn't happy with being subbed, but there was just no quality there. I just felt like we were mid-season. We've got enough points in the table. Let's try to experiment, tinker with the team. But if we're doing this week in, week out, we haven't got a steady lineup. Now, yes, albeit there might be a few injuries here and there, but in my opinion, I've said this, and I'm still categorically say this, the squad that we've got, we should be finishing top 10, not bottom four or bottom five. And, you know, when we haven't got the managers getting the best out of these players or constantly changing tactics and changing tactics various times throughout the game, it's obviously he's still undecided what his best 11 is, what his preferred structure and approach to a game is. It's a debacle, really, to be honest. You know, I don't want to keep going on about the subject of kit. I think we've bored it and, you know, talked about it to exhaustion in recent weeks. But it just felt there was no shape to that game on Wednesday. The players were out of position. New players coming in. All these lone players trying to do things, but everyone was not in their rightful position. And you can't keep tinkering with a lineup several times in one game of 90 minutes. It's not going to work. And Wednesday night proved that. So we constantly kept changing formation. It's very, very bizarre. So, but you know, me being the ever the optimist, I want to look forward. Let's not dwell on the negatives in the past. And Joe, you keep telling me week in, week out when we go to games, you just want this season over and done with. And I think you speak on behalf of most of the fans who go week in, week out and come from far afield like yourself, David. But yeah, I think we're all very similar in terms of the lineup not being as a better than Wigan, but again, not offering much of a plan B there. And So let's move on to the actual. Let's just focus on some of the key. You know, Russ likes to focus on the key moments of the match, but again, from a Fulham perspective, I don't think there was any key moments other than late in the first half. But let's just go through some of those key themes and key activities of the game. So, as you mentioned earlier a few moments ago, David, that within the first 3 or 4 minutes we could have been a couple goals down. So we got away with within the first minute, Derbyshire, who was probably their most dangerous player on the night. You know, heading wide. You know, then there was another shot which resulted in the corner, and then we failed to clear our lines, and they scored from the corner kick. So, do you want to give us a five second summary of the first few minutes of the game, David?
Well, it was basically same old again, wasn't it? You know, under pressure straight away, conceding corners, conceding early goals. Don't really need to say any more than that. We've seen it so many times this year.
Yeah, exactly. And again, it's a same old adjectives. You know, we weren't clearing our lines. We just felt scared. We were very, you know, we're nervous. That was my concern from this game. We didn't come out as buoyed up as we did against Wigan. Wigan, we started off brightly. We scored an early goal. This was a complete reverse. You know, we just whistle off went the whistle, and we were on the back foot from the word go. And you know, to concede so many corners this year, Mike Gregg to do a bit of analysis. How many corners have we conceded throughout the season in the first 10 minutes? You know, I hate to imagine how many we've conceded. We just put ourselves on the back foot from the word go, and that's exactly what happened on Wednesday. And, you know, the guy, Rotherham, deservedly took the lead. We could have been two goals down at that moment. And, you know, there you go. The boos around the stadium within the first few minutes. Joe, going over to you. What was your overview of the first few minutes of the game from kickoff?
Like David said, under pressure from the word go, really. There was, you know, awful mix-ups between the defence and Bettinelli, and you know, we didn't ever get going, really. So the the first 5 minutes set the template for the whole game, and yeah. You know, you could just see it coming. I just don't understand it. You know, and we've seen it so many times this season. Very, very slow starters on many, many, many occasions. Yeah. So, like David said, there wasn't key moments of the match for us. There were key moments for them, for Rotherham, because, you know, just looking at the 2-minute highlights that Fulham put out on YouTube, Matt Derbyshire could have easily made it 2-0. Bettinelli did spread himself well to smother the shot. And they had other close shaves as well. So I suppose key moments of the match would be, the saves from Bettinelli and the misses from Rotherham in the first half that could have put the game out of reach at half time.
Yeah, and I think the key thing here, you've made a number of valid points there, Joe. And, again, I just look for defensive. We always put ourselves on the back foot, but our passing ability is abysmal. You know, if we've got a keeper who's got a back four who are very uncertain, very nervous, we haven't got that leader who likes to carry the ball forward, show that sort of power, and and like a Chris Coleman, who was very confident carrying the ball forward. You know, the Coleman Simons era in the late 90s in defence, they both leverage off each other's strengths. We need a leader who's confident carrying the ball. You've got fullbacks like Richards who, being a lone player, just I feel very nervous every time he touches a ball. He only goes sideways or backwards. Very rarely do you see him pushing forward or trying to, you know, hook up with some of his midfield and try to take the game forward. It just seems it's very sideways, backwards, and as soon as we put some misplaced passes or mistimed passes, you've got the other teams who come in with a bit more pace, a bit more energy, a bit more desire, and then they steal the ball off us, and then we're immediately on the back foot. You know, our defensive incapability of actually holding the ball and passing to feet. And I keep banging on about this game in, game out. Football's not a difficult game. You know, if you don't do the basics of football, which is to pass the ball to feet, pole possession and try to make something happen. You know, we can't do the basics very well, and we haven't done that all for a couple of seasons now. So anyway, enough of me whinging on some of the negatives. Obviously, you've talked about it, Joe, around some of those other opportunities that Rotherham had. So again, after they did score the goal, and there were other opportunities for them to increase their lead. And it all stems, you know, from bad defending, giving the ball away cheaply. And I'd like to ask your thoughts about Bettinelli, because throughout the first half, and in particular throughout the game, in fact, he was very nervous, very uncertain, flattened a lot of crosses, didn't look very assured. What were your thoughts of Bettinelli, especially in that first half when, yes, he did make a couple of solid saves, but he did flap on a few occasions. That made me feel extremely nervous. So any thoughts around that?
Yeah, I mean, he's a talented young player, no doubt. But, you know, he's got a lot to learn. So in one match, you'll see him make outstanding saves, but at the same time, flapping around in the penalty area. You know, a bit of a Dracula syndrome, scared of crosses, and he's got to work on that. I think his punching abilities leave a lot to be desired. He needs to improve on that. He's a good goalkeeper, but he's young, so we've got to give him a chance. But you know, against Rotherham, he was flapping around a lot, and just about getting away with it. Yeah, so. Yeah. You know, he's a great saver of the ball. Everyone says, great shot stopper, but you know that's what a goalkeeper has to be, really. You know, not saying anything, but he's got to improve on his punching abilities. He's got to have a better command of his area, I think. Yeah. But you know, give him a chance. He's only young, and there's a lot. You know, there's a lot of good things to see in him. We'll just have to give it a few more years. If he's still with the club, we'll see how he progresses.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that. And again, I'm very disappointed with a large section of the fans who actually was booing. Again, the whole performance was not acceptable. But when you've got a young keeper, England under 21 keeper for that matter, who's maybe not commanding his area like you said as securely as we would like, maybe coming off his line unnecessarily so, and you know, again, booing your potentially your future England number one keeper is not the right thing to be doing. So, David, what was your reaction when maybe there was a bit of emphasis on Bettinelli being booed when he was making wrong decisions, punching a ball away unnecessarily, coming off his line too early? Any disappointment from your side?
I think, for me, I mean, obviously you two sit in a different part of the ground to me, so sometimes a different perspective. I think the boos for me were more just generally directed at the poor play and, you know, the pressure that he was put under as much as poor decision-making by him, because I don't think anyone would deny that, you know, he's saved us in several matches this year. I think, to be in all honesty, if we had a decent backup keeper, I think you probably would have pulled him out of the firing line at some point, because it can't be good for him to play behind such a crap defence, to put it bluntly. And, you know, maybe he needs a bit of a break from it, because it's going to affect his game and his confidence if he's having to, like, try and make amends for their, you know, inability to defend set pieces and corners and such like. But as we know, we've got, you know, if our defence is crap, our reserve goalkeeper is even more so. So we have at the moment really no choice but to play Bettinelli. That's a dangerous situation to be in, really. You have to always have competition for places. And to be absolutely frank, there isn't any competition for places in the goalkeeping stakes, as far as I can see. So he is the only choice that you can make. So, you know, he's been put into it. It must be, you know, tough for him. In any other respect, you know, a good strength of character, maybe a character building exercise in the long run. But in the short term, you know, he's getting a lot of flack because, as you know, I mean, I played in goal. The goalkeeper always tends to get the blame when the ball goes in. It's not the guy who made the mistake up the pitch. You always end up looking at the goalie. But for me, yeah, I don't think he's been singled out for criticism particularly. I think it's just generally the bad play. But, you know, I have to say, obviously, he started very nervously on Wednesday, and there were maybe some poor choices. But interspersed with that, there were a couple of smart saves which, you know, undoubtedly kept us in the game as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Some interesting takes there, David. So good perspective around that. So if we move on briefly just before half time. So again, Brian Ruiz had a sort of half opportunity to score on the 44th minute. Joe, did you note the opportunity from Ruiz? Maybe could have done a little bit better.
Well, I saw the chance and on replay, and to be honest, is the angle he was coming in from was pretty acute, really. So, you know, whether he could have squared it and he had other options, I don't know. But he took it up on his own, and I didn't think he had much option but to shoot. But because the angle was so acute, I don't think unless he slid it under the goalkeeper's between the goalkeeper's legs, he wasn't going to score or anything. So he had a lot of room to run into, but it was coming at a very, very acute angle.
Yeah, okay. And going in again shortly after that, I think we got ourselves under further pressure. I think it was an injury time. I recall that that Rotherham hit the post. I think Bettinelli, if I recall, actually managed to get his hands to the ball and actually put it towards the post. So again, another unnerving moment just before the end of the first half. And obviously there was a chorus of boos as the referee blew up for the end of the first half, which couldn't have come soon enough. So extremely, as we said, extremely disappointing first half. And I think David, myself, I think if I recall, going through Twitter at the time, you know, we were both saying that the game wasn't over. We both said that we should have been good three goals down, if not more. Yet, whilst you're only a goal down, your opposition aren't taking their opportunities, you've still got some hope. So I was buoyed by that, thinking, well, if we come out with a bit more purpose, a bit more belief, get an early equaliser, we can go on to win the game. And we started the second half fairly brightly, and we had an early free kick from McCormack. So do you want to just talk about the build-up to that, David? And, you know, McCormack had a couple free kicks in fairly good positions, which were fairly wasteful as always. So do you want to comment on those?
Yeah, no, well, I mean, at half-time, we were actually really up against it, because I don't know if you heard it discussed on a previous show. Apparently, when we've lost the lead at home first, we've only gained 1 point all season, which was the Blackpool game where we came back from 2-0 down. I think every other game where we've lost the lead, we've gone on to lose the game. And in addition to that, our unlucky mascot, Ian Abrahams from Talk Sport, was in attendance, and we've been pretty poor with him there. So we were really up against it. So I guess in a way, we did quite well. But as regards those free kicks, I commented on Twitter that the first one that McCormack took, it was the biggest danger was to the roof of the Hammersmith end for that one, because it really went well over. I mean, I think Fulham FC on their feed said McCormack hits it just over the bar or something, which was, you know, talk about putting a positive spin on it. It really went miles over the bar. It was a very bad connection, that one. And the one he had laterally from a similar position, a little bit further in, I have to say. The first one was a bit further out. The second one was probably an ideal position for a free kick. Not too far, but not too close that you have to get it up and down, you know, in a short space. Second one was still cleared the bar by enough. It was better, but wasn't really good enough. I noticed that there were other people lining up to take it, and I wondered if they might try and do something different, but no. Both those were wasted. And, you know, we've seen other teams have been much more punishing, you know, against us in similar positions again. I know McCormack has scored a couple of this year from these situations. It always seems to be that other teams score much more against us than vice versa. So, you know, the half chances that we had in those situations were just wasted, really. And, yeah, we had a few big guys in there as well. We could have alternatively gone for the sort of the driven one towards the far post where the keeper can't come because a little touch will take it past him, with, you know, Dan Byrne and Matt Smith and, you know, Michael Turner in there, among others. We had, you know, a few people to cause trouble. So, you know, maybe it was a poor decision by McCormack to try and go for goal on both occasions, really.
Yeah, absolutely. We were, myself and Joe were commenting on the fact that where McCormack took only second free kick was very much in a similar position to where Pennant scored a very good goal for Wigan last Friday. So, again,
exactly,
there was an opportunity to score from one of those opportunities, and it's just disappointing that we didn't test the keeper or put the opposition under more pressure. So, so there were obviously some wasteful opportunities in the second half. I know, interestingly, Pitt did make an early substitution. I mean, you commented on it earlier that, you know, bringing on Tim Hoogan for a Tunnicliffe early second half was not the most inspirational of moves. Maybe Hoogan offers a little bit more going forward, but again, I think we've already mentioned that Hoogan didn't really offer that much more than Tunnicliffe, and maybe did get himself into good positions, but was maybe could have done better with some of his headers in the second half. So, what were your observations, Joe, around the substitution? Any, inspired or?
Well, it wasn't really inspiring, judging by the what we'd seen before. Tunnicliffe for Hoogland. I suppose he wanted to. Kitsarvis wanted to replace a defensive-minded midfielder with a more attacking midfielder. I'm not to say that Hoogland is a sort of an attacking midfielder, but he does get into positions. Yeah, he does get into attacking positions. Hence the two chances he had where he ballooned his headers over the bar in good positions. So I suppose I could understand that, he was an extra option up front and he did get into those good positions, but his finishing was woeful. That was the only sub of the night. The problem was we didn't have many other options up, on the bench, as you said earlier, apart from attacking-wise, Roddy Yeager and Woodrow. Whether he could have taken off, someone like Ruiz, who, despite his talent, wasn't in the game at all, I don't know.
Okay, interesting there, Joe. Thank you. And again, in the midway through the second half, I wouldn't say we're necessarily adding the pressure, but if anyone was going to score, it felt like it was going to be Fulham. We had more possession than we did in the first half. We were playing very long balls to Matt Smith, and thankfully, he won a header that fell nicely to Parker, who passed the ball to McCormack, who potentially scored a fortuitous goal, in my opinion. We both believed he handled the ball and scuffed his shot. David, from behind the goal and the Hamilton's end, what were your observations of the goal?
Yeah, it was pretty much like that. It was a typical ball play from the back to Matt Smith, a long ball. But he's played a really good knockdown, Matt Smith. He's known exactly where Parker was, and he's knocked it to Parker. And Parker's kind of hit it first time quite hard at McCormack. It certainly looked like it's hit McCormack's arm or hand or something, which has kind of slowed the pass of the ball. Maybe not deliberate, but it's given us an advantage most certainly. And then McCormack's put it across, the goalkeeper into the far corner. Don't know how well he connected really, but well enough to get to find the corner. But it was almost a muted celebration at the Hammers' end, because I think we're all expecting the referee to stop for handball or something. So it wasn't a massive kind of instant cheer. I was looking across at the assistant ref and the ref to make sure it had been given before kind of launching into a celebration. Nevertheless, he was there. He's been moved back up into a central striking position, second half, and where he causes danger, and he's, by hook or by crook, he's put the ball in the net. And so, we have to be thankful for getting a bit of luck on that occasion.
Absolutely. And again, I was adamant that now that we'd scored that goal, there was sufficient time to take that confidence forward and try to push for a second goal. And soon after, I recall that there was a body check on McCormack. He then wasted that other opportunity. But the reality of the matter is, I don't recall any other notable opportunities for the last 20 minutes of the game. Again, we lacked inspiration. Kit didn't make any more substitutions, which was maybe disappointing. I thought maybe we would have best to potentially have taken a risk. There was an opportunity maybe to take a tiring Smith off and put Roddy Yeager or Woodrow just to change it a little bit, but just to give a bit more energy to their defence, who in my opinion were tiring as well. But we gave them the opportunity to start pushing forward, and that resulted in Turner and Byrne both picking up yellow cards in the last 10 minutes, which was extremely disappointing. So again, more disciplinary issues within the club. But Joe, from your perspective, the last 20 minutes, anything that springs to mind, any positives that you could take from the last quarter of the game?
Not really, no. We pushed up and we tried to be on the front foot, but the lack of sort of skill to create chances was apparent, and there was still the we were still nervous about the Rotherham counter attacks, Really, apart from the Hoogland headed chances, I can't think of any other shots on target, really. One or two good build ups, but they came to nothing.
Thanks guys for your summary of a very 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 below par performance. It's another adjective there from my perspective. Obviously conscious of time, so I'm only going to briefly talk about some of the stats of the game. And in my opinion, these actually surprised me when I saw these after the game. And despite obviously from a shot perspective, we won 13-12. Only three of those were on target versus five for Rotherham. An interesting stat, from my perspective, is our passing accuracy was 71% compared to Rotherham's 60%. Rotherham conceded 14 fouls to our 11. A key stat from my perspective, they had 12 corners against our 4. They had 2 offsides against 1. Another disappointing statistic, and we've commented on this on various times on the show, we had 3 yellow cards compared to their 1. Our possession was 55%, which is surprising compared to their 45%. And a stat which I don't think Russ often mentions is the attendance of only 15,000, which, again, Wednesday night, I understand, against a very poor opposition, but when the chips are down, you want your fans to come in to support the club. But unfortunately, 15,000 attendance was extremely low and disappointing. So, David, from your perspective, what was your key stat of that, or the most surprising stat?
I think it was actually a surprise that at the end of the day we had more possession and we had more shots than them, albeit they had more on target. The corners was the least surprising because they were clearly had much more than that. But and also the one I didn't know about them was that our passing accuracy was better. I think that's got to be wrong, really. I can't believe that's correct, Emilio, if you watch that game. Because our passing was awful. We played like 11 individuals. There was no coherency at all between our team, not really. So that one is a big shock for me that we outpassed them, because you just wouldn't have believed that watching that match.
Absolutely.
Not at all. Yeah.
Absolutely. And Joe, anything that stands out that, from your perspective?
Like David said, the possession stats were quite surprising. But when you think about it, and the passing accuracy, Rotherham were basically up and at them, long ball. They didn't pussyfoot around by passing in defence like we did. Yeah? Maybe most of our passing accuracy was between Byrne and Turner and the fullbacks, basically, because there was no urgency there. Yeah. Unlike Rotherham, even though it was pretty industrial stuff, they pumped the ball up quite fairly quickly. So maybe that's why we had better possession than them. We didn't do anything with the possession, and a lot of it may have been tappy at the back. Yeah,
absolutely.
Burn to think about whether to pass forward or pass sideways or not.
Sure.
But yeah, the possession surprised me at first, but then I realised, I can see why that was. It doesn't mean 50. A better possession means that you're the better team. No way.
Mm. Okay. So, yeah, I think we all had a common thing. Again, some of those stats were very surprising considering how poor we actually were. So, just wanted to share those with you guys.
Yeah.
Let's move on to one of the favourite topics amongst our listeners. It's obviously rating the Fulham players. So, I want to sort of cover these off fairly quickly, given the fact there's not really much to comment on. So, Joe, back over to you, the keeper. I know we've talked about Bettinelli. What's your rating for him and overall assessment?
6. Made some key saves. Wasn't at fault for the goal. That was a complete mess up by the defenders. And unfortunately, Smith was in there. And, anyway. But, yeah, 6. Because, he was flapping around, like I said earlier. He made me feel a bit nervous whenever crosses went in there or corners, but he did what he had to do when faced with oncoming attackers from Rotherham bearing down on goal, and he did make a couple of crucial saves, including the one that he tipped to hit the post, and the one where Derbyshire was almost more or less clean on goal. He did well to block that. So six for me.
Okay. And David, to you, your ratings for Marcus, definitely.
I'm going to be a bit harsher because I thought that he was very nervous, and in that first half, although the goal wasn't his fault, I thought he was quite poor at times. His kicking also, a couple of poor kicks. Yes, he did make a couple of good saves, but also second half, bad misjudgment to take the ball out of the air with his hands. Lucky not to have been at least yellow carded for that, really, as well. Red card would have been a disaster, obviously, but certainly I'm surprised it wasn't a yellow card there. So for me, I'm going to give him 5 out of 10. He certainly wasn't my worst player, though.
Yes, okay, and I agree with you. I give him only a 5 because of, in particular, the error of judgment in the second half and just his general poor decision making, especially in the first half from corners. So not his best game by country mile. So a 5 for me equally. So David, back over to you. Let's do a very quick assessment on our back four. So we'll go through the play.
Ashley Richards, still not sure why we've got him on loan. Not sure why he was picked. But, I mean, if Kit is favouring Ruiz, I think Ashley Richards is right up there as well because he seems to get in the team regardless. Offers for me nothing that anything can't do and less. I mean, the thing that really annoyed me, and you've touched on it already with Richards, is that he's supposedly quite quick, but he never goes forward. He stops and turns inside and goes square. He didn't once put the ball outside the defender and run and try and get forward. And that was the problem. We were just never got out of our own half the time because we didn't have anyone really creative in the team, so we needed the fullbacks to get forward. I thought he was pretty useless. He defended probably okay in the main, although I think the goal came from his side.
Oops, looks like we've lost David, Joe. He's just stopped on the line. So over to you. So do you want to give a quick assessment on the defence, Dave, Joe?
Richards didn't really impress, and I echo the sentiments that you've put forward about him being, not necessarily, having attacking instincts. Same on Wednesday night. A 5 I'd give him. Turner is quality, but unfortunately he's lumbered with an awful team. So, he did his best. He got a yellow card though. I can only give him a 5 as well, really, because of the lack of, distribution out from defence, from all the defenders, wasn't good enough. Byrne won a lot of headers. You're always going to notice Byrne because he's towering above every player. And he did win some important headers. It wasn't very pretty. I suppose I'll give him a 5.5. It's a shame about Husband because he's been very impressive in the two games that I've seen him. He was awful on Wednesday. Just didn't have a good game. I don't know whether that was him or the opposition or the fact that the whole team played badly. I'm unfortunately going to have to give him a 4.5 because he set fairly high standards. In the games that I've seen anyway, but. They dropped considerably.
Sure. Okay. David, you should be back on the line. Are you back on the line?
Yeah, I don't know. Was that... Kit must have got on there when I was criticising Ashley Richards. I don't know how far you got on that one. Obviously, if it had been Jack Grimmer I was criticising, I would have blamed Mike Gregg. But, I don't know if you heard anyway. I thought Ashley Richards... I don't know how much you heard before I was cut off, but he just didn't get forward for me enough. So I gave him 4... because he kept turning inside and putting pressure on us. Turner, I gave him a 5. Thought he did okay, but he was a bit caught out there, had to concede a booking. Dan Byrne, for me, was actually our best defender out of the lot. I gave him 6 because I think he was fairly solid. Yes, he did get himself a yellow card near the end, but I thought actually that he was much better than he had been of you know, of his previous run in the team, much more assured. Anyhow, I just heard what Joe said there. I agree about Husband. I was disappointed because I've been impressed with him so far, but didn't really offer enough. He did try and get forward a bit more than Richards and take the men on the outside, but for me, only 5 out of 10 for Husband.
Okay, so I think I'll quickly give my view. I gave Richards a 4.5, Turner 5, Byrne 5.5 only because he picked up that yellow card, so I dropped to 0.5 there. And I've also given Husband 4.5. Not really did enough for me. Very disappointed with his performance. So, David, with you again. So, quick summary of the midfield, please.
Well, Tunnicliffe, I thought he was absolutely appalling, unfortunately. Highly in the game, missed passing, didn't do anything really contributed defensively or attackingly. So I actually gave him 3 out of 10. I thought he was appalling. Parker, easily his worst game for a long time as well, although, you know, he still contributed with getting in, you know, the assist for the goal. And he was trying, but, you know, he was falling over the ball and, you know, very un-Scott Parker-like. And for a couple of times he put his head in where it hurts. You've got to give him credit for trying. But if it was anyone else, it'd probably be less. But I saw what he was trying to do, so I'm going to give him 5 still. Guthrie, for me, very disappointing. Didn't really offer much. People have been talking up a lot, but I haven't seen anything particularly out of him yet. His passing wasn't that good. And he was very lucky he didn't get himself sent off because he'd been booked. A late challenge, and the referee was quite lenient on most things, really, I think.
Good observation. Observation, yeah.
Yeah, so for me, 4.5 for him, really. I thought he was poor. And I'm going to count Brian Ruiz as the other midfield one, although he started up front. He was just periphery to the game, really. He didn't really get in the game first half, because first half they were trying long balls for Smith, and they had 2 men on Smith a lot of the time, and he wasn't getting many knockdowns. Ruiz wasn't getting in the game. Second half, stuck out wide, wasn't in the game at all, just didn't work. And really, you know, if there had been an opportunity to swap him for someone else, we should have taken it. But I'm going to give him 4 out of 10 because he just really wasn't in the game.
Okay, interesting there, David. Joe, quick summary from you for the midfield 4?
Parker, yeah, I mean, didn't. I echo all the sentiments that have been said so far. Parker didn't really have a good game at all. I thought he couldn't... Well, he didn't improve on the Wigan performance, which I thought was his worst performance I've ever seen. Yeah, he was really terrible against Wigan. He didn't do much to improve on that on Wednesday. So, you know, I'll give him a 5. He tried hard, and like David said, he sort of set up the goal, even though it was quite a swift pass. Guthrie, even though we got tonked 4-1 against Brentford, I was impressed with him then. But he went downhill rapidly on Wednesday, and he was awful. His passing was good against Brentford. He chose a simple pass, and his passing accuracy must have been pretty good in that game. But on Wednesday night, even not under pressure, he couldn't pass accurately. Yes. So 4.5. Tunnicliffe ran around a lot, you know, a lot of energy, didn't get him anywhere. Didn't notice him in the first 10, 15 minutes. But, you know, didn't impress me at all, so 4.5. Ruiz wasn't in the game, as David said. I found him a lot on the wing, you know, just helping out the defender. Yeah, you know, not in his normal customary midfield position. So the game passed him by. Maybe it wasn't his kind of game, but you know, the fact that he didn't contribute anything really apart from the chance that you said, Emilio, he had in the first half means that he gets a 4.5 as well.
Okay, so yeah, just for completeness, from my perspective, I gave Parker a 5, Guthrie a 4.5, Tunnicliffe a 4, and Ruiz also a 4.5. So I think we're all fairly fairly consistent with our ratings across the board there. Mm-hmm. And lastly, Joe, quick summary of reform, McCormack and Matt Smith up front, please.
Okay. Well, Smith battled hard. He won a few headers. He had two defenders on him every time he went up for a ball. Yeah, so they Rotherham did their job and they did it very well. They did a job on him, basically. He battled hard. He won a couple of headers. Generously, I'll give him a 5.5. Yeah. Because he did as best as he could. There wasn't much service, but he did get a bit of service with the long balls. Won a few headers, but didn't win a lot of them either. McCormack had a poor game, but scored the goal. And if it wasn't for him and his goals recently, where would we be? We'll probably be in the relegation zone. I don't know what to give him. Maybe a 5. 5.5 at best. For the goal. Yeah.
Okay, exactly.
He's always sniffing for a goal.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be a little bit more critical. Yes, he did score a goal, but it wasn't the most confident of goals. A bit fortuitous, as we mentioned earlier. I didn't think he was involved in the game as much as he normally is. Wasn't as creative. Looked disinterested. He was... just lacked, I don't know, something not quite right there. Maybe the speculation of a possible transfer at the end of the season might be playing on his mind. He was wasteful with the free kick, so I'm only giving him a 5, to be honest. I'm actually going to be quite critical because this was a game for him to take it, do something about that team. The team, there was no shape, there was no structure, a lot of expectations on his shoulders. But again, just felt that he was very frustrated at times, and it was very notable on Wednesday. And so I only gave him a 5. And Matt Smith, I'm giving him a 5.5 on the basis that he actually tried. He played the whole game, worked his socks off, won a good header from the long ball, which led to the goal. So if anything, I felt he tried more consistently throughout the game. And, if we had better delivery, then we might have got a better end product from Matt Smith. So that's my take. Quick take, David, over to you. What's your take of McCormack and Smith?
I'm actually going to give them both 5. And the reason is, Matt Smith was marked out of the game first half, really. As I said, two men on him all the time. Didn't really get a chance. And it was also the service to him as well was pretty poor. Husband hardly got forward. Ashley Richards never got forward. It's not his fault, but he didn't really get in the game. McCormack, first half, it was the Brian Ruiz syndrome. He had the poison chalice of being stuck on the left first half. And he was, although he does come inside to try and get in the game, he wasn't in the game enough. Second half, yes, he got the goal, maybe a bit luckily, but his free kicks were poor. He took both of them, and in key situations, you've got to be doing better with those. At least you've got to make the goalkeeper do some work or something. So 5 out of 10 for both of them, really, because it was a poor performance all round. I mean, they are they're two of the better marks. I've given less than that, so
yes,
but not the best mark. You expect more from McCormack, really, on a good pitch as well. On a hard pitch like we've got tomorrow, it's going to be difficult for people who like to run with the ball or play it on the ground. But no, not good enough from McCormack, really. Needs to use the ball better. Matt Smith, more a case that he was just marked out of the game too much and not enough service.
Okay, yeah, I think so. Again, I think we're very consistent there with McCormack. So, I feel 5 was merited. I don't think anything better than that, from my opinion. So consistent again there. So in the interest of time, I'm not going to rate Hoogland nor man of the match. In my opinion, there was no man of the match again as per the Wigan game last week. So I just want to get one last rating for Kit Simon. So, Joe, what would you rate Kit in terms of his formation, his tactical or lack of tactical decision-making throughout the game?
Well, how low can you go? I don't know.
There's never too low.
Well, he didn't get the opposition. They did a number on him, even though they didn't win. They deserved to win. But he didn't get the opposition at all. And they imposed their game on us rather than the other way round. So as many times before we've said it, tactically he's naive. He doesn't know, how to bring out the best in his side compared to the opposition. So... he's going to get a 3.
Okay. David, any lower?
Well, I gave 3.33 recurring previously, and last game I halved it to 1.666 recurring against Wigan for the complete defensive nature. But I think he did actually pick a better starting lineup this time, so I'm minded to go back more to my 3.33 again. However, I was speaking to Mimi briefly before the game, and I need to come up with more inventive marking. So I'm going to give Kit pi this time. So that's 3.1415927 and whatever it is after that. So pi. So a little over 3.14 for Kit. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to be a little bit more generous, Richard. I actually felt that he maybe is around 4.5. I think at the end of the day, the lineup was a touch more positive. But at times, I would have liked to have seen, as soon as we saw an equaliser, I would have liked to have changed it there and then, put on, be aggressive, be positive, stamp your authority on the game. And there was an opportunity to do that by maybe just changing it up front and adding a bit more energy and pace. But that was disappointing. But in the whole, I don't think it was Kit's fault that the players weren't gelling, unless they weren't playing for him. I think that's the thing. He chose a more positive lineup. But if the players aren't doing the basics of football, which is passing to feet and keeping hold of the ball and trying to do something with it, then it's not always Kit's fault. So I'm giving him a 4.5 on that basis. So, okay, thank you, guys. So let's enough of the negatives of the Rotherham game. Let's actually move on to a new feature of the show, which is focusing on some of the positives of our past. I actually want to sort of cover off a new feature around sort of going down memory lane and actually focusing on some of the more positive games in yesteryear, which took place around this week. So I've done a bit of research and picked two games which all three of us have attended in the past and want to focus on the thoughts, the memories, where things have gone wrong potentially, or let's reflect on those games. And there's a game dating back to the 12th of April 2009, which was an Easter Sunday, where Fulham were televised on the television against Manchester City. We won 3-1 away from home. And Joe, you were there at the game that day on Easter Sunday. What do you recollect from that game? And reflect 6 years on where we are now compared to that fixture where we won away to Man City 3-1.
Yeah, it seems like a universe away now. That era. I don't go to many away games. I thought I'd meet my friend, the Huddersfield fan, Manchester. Had a couple of drinks. And looked around Manchester and went to the game, not expecting a win, but it was the prime of the Hodgson era, and went to the game, and we went down 1-0. I can't remember who scored now. I think it was Ireland scored.
Stephen Ireland.
Yeah. Who did the same thing when we, in our great escape season, he scored to put them in front, 1-3-2. But after that, without dominating the game, we controlled them. And I remember it was a great game, lots of fun, not many Fulham fans there, but we had a great time. I remember the Fulham fans were singing some nice anti-John Terry songs. It was around about the time where his mum was caught shoplifting. That was great. There were some great chants there. Even if Tuhu scored, and Dempsey scored a couple in the second half. And in the second half, I seem to remember that, we ran out fairly easy winners, even with them having Robinho, who came off the bench.
That's right.
So it was a great away day, and I'm very lucky because I don't go to many away games, and the away games I do go to, I've got a pretty good record, really, so I should go to more.
Absolutely. We've got a good
away game with you and Rod and Huddersfield away.
Great moment. That was obviously the season where that led us to going into the Europa League the following season. And obviously, we don't want to dwell on that too much, especially now whilst Wolfsburg got hammered by my Italian team, Napoli, yesterday. It did bring back memories of Bobby Zamora's early goal 5 years ago this week. So, yeah, how times do change. David, you're obviously at the ground that on Easter Sunday that year. Anything else you want to add? Any other fond memories from that game?
No, I watched that one on TV. I was there the year before for the 3-2 Great Escape, because that was I think it was the year before. I know it was, we won twice in a row, I think, didn't we there? And as Joe said, Stephen Ireland scored a very similar goal in both matches of those ones there. But on this occasion, yeah, this was. I remembered the pre-match press was kind of bringing up the facts that Dixon Atuhu was playing against his brother, Kelvin, in this match. And it was Dixon who came out with the bragging rights because obviously he got the goal. So yeah, that was in the end it was really quite comfortable, and it, you know, to win twice at Man City, you know, two seasons running, I think it was, is incredible really when you look at how things have changed now, of course, you know, and the amount of money and investment they've had there, and they still even had then. I think Mark Hughes was manager then, wasn't he? Of course, it was Sven was there in the Great Escape, and then Mark Hughes, and yeah, I remember Robinho being there. So yeah, it just seems surreal now, really, that we went there and were comfortable winners, and it wasn't a fluke, really. You know, we did deserve that one, and it just shows how diametrically opposed we are, like as a club and a setup and as a team now, compared to back under the sort of days of Roy, when it could be a bit, you know, conservative at times, but we had stability.
Mm, exactly. And then again, it's a year. You know, a year in football is a very long time. A year in work is a very long time. But again, it's just amazing how tides can change very, very quickly in any industry, whether it be sport, the economy, etc. So yeah, you know, just it was only 6 years ago this week that we had that comfortable win, and I want to then go on to the next game, which I've got on the sort of flashbacks, which is going a little bit further back. This going back to 16th of April, 2001. This goes back to your infamous Jean Tigana days, David, when Fulham equalised in injury time via Sean Davies to get a 1-1 draw against Sheffield Wednesday to actually win the championship title then. So that's, 14 years ago now. What memories do you bring back from that game? Do you want to share that with our listeners?
I think this is the one where we played we played Marcus Hanenim in goal for some reason, and I'm not really sure why, because he let in a real clanger. I think it was from a corner or something like that, and he just didn't get it. It was just, and it gave them an easy goal. And it was kind of a bit of an anticlimax, because it's a real party atmosphere, obviously, because of where we were and what was resting on the match. But from a season where we'd been head and shoulders really above other teams, even Blackburn, despite what Souness said, you know, it was a very nervy performance, really. It wasn't like the ones we'd seen that year. Mm. You know, it was such expectation, but in the end, obviously, the late goal was enough, and it was like a win, I suppose, in the end, really. The way it ended up was like a win to get that late goal to seal things is, you know, party atmosphere there. So it kind of came good in the end, and no one really worried too much about the fact that we hadn't actually won, or we hadn't really performed as well as we had been doing. So, you know, it was always well that ends well on that one.
Okay, thank you for that, David. Thanks for sharing that with our listeners. And Joe, obviously, we weren't sitting next to each other in those days, but what were your recollection of that game? What was your biggest, greatest memory of that fixture?
Yeah. I'd agree with David. I seem to remember it wasn't a game that we played well in compared to the standards we'd set for the whole season. It was very nervy. I seem to remember we weren't putting our imposing our free flowing football. It was very bitty, and it was, in a way, it was one of the worst home performances of that season. But when the goal went in, it was a perfect way to win the championship, you know, right at the end, even though we didn't really deserve the draw. And the quality of the goal as well, has to be said, was great. Sean Davies sort of swivelling to sort of half volley the ball into the far corner. That was a great goal, but the game before wasn't brilliant, and it started off as a party atmosphere, but it was all a bit low key until that moment. But still, we had a great time after that goal went in.
Absolutely, and my memory certainly is just the amount of possession we had. I just recall we had so much possession.
we offered so much, but it just didn't go for us. And like you said, we had to wait till the injury time for Sean Davis to get score, taking his shirt off and running with it flat, you know, running the, you know, waving it in the air, promptly getting booked for it. But who cares? You know, we got, we won the championship. We had, I actually looked back, and we actually had 75% possession that day. So again, when's the last time in recent years have we had a 75% possession rate, if ever, since those days? So again, maybe that's a Mike Gregg stat that he can go away and delve through the records, see if we can find a game where we've dominated it with that much possession. So yeah, other than that, concur with all of what you both said, you know, fond memories. That's amazing. It's just actually 15 years ago. So again, where does the time go? So so hopefully people, the listeners, you'll enjoy that new feature on the show today. Just, you know, some of you may not have been born back in 2001 or may not have been supporting the club then, but hopefully there's opportunities to see highlights of these games on YouTube and other social media sites. So please do do a bit of a review and be good to get your thoughts. So please do feedback on the Cottage Book, Cottage Talk Facebook and Twitter sites. Okay, obviously this is a double header today, so obviously we've got to focus on the Blackpool game tomorrow. So again, I'm not going to focus extensively on this per se, but let's just go through some of the subjects I want to cover off before we end the show tonight. So obviously Blackpool, you know, bottom of the table, they're relegated. My opinion, have got nothing to lose, but Fulham have still got everything to play for. So David, what are your expectations of this fixture? You know, what are your thoughts? You know, is it a winnable game? And given our record against the bottom four this season is not 1-0 out of seven, can we break that hoodoo and that duck?
I'm not sure if we can, actually. My confidence is shot to pieces, just like the team at the moment. I'm struggling to see if we'll get anything. I mean, some of the matches we've got things in have been very unexpected games, and the games we've expected to do well in, we've been poor. And, you know, we really struggled against them at home, and it was only by virtue that they had a player sent off that we actually got back into the game. And on their pitch, where, you know, you'd think they'll be more used to it than we will, we're going to struggle to compete. Perhaps it'll mean that, you know, if we're going to play the Matt Smith kind of long ball football, it won't matter as much. But, you know, everyone's clambering to get people in the team to run at them and everything. And obviously we know Roberts won't be featuring, I guess, because he played today. And Brian Ruiz doesn't seem to like travelling, and I can't see him wanting to play on this sort of pitch or thriving. So I think it's going to be quite difficult for us. And they have nothing to lose, obviously. And the way we've been playing and leaking goals still, I don't have any you know, potential. I think, to be honest, if we got a point out of it, we'd probably have to take that, to be honest with you, Emilio.
Yeah, fair point there, David, and I totally concur with that. Again, it's just disappointing we're in a position where we're actually still talking about survival, you know, with only three games to go. It's just incredible. And over to you, Joe. You know, going back for David's uncertain that we can actually get a win. Do you actually believe that Fulham can win this match and retain their championship status?
Yeah, well, I believe we can. Whether we do or not, it's another matter. I do agree with David about the pitch. I was going to mention that myself, that, you know, it's an awful pitch, very bobbly, very bare, and they're used to it more than we are. Kit's got to be very careful about the personnel that he chooses when it comes to dealing with that pitch. They've got nothing to lose, like you said. They potentially could play with a lot of freedom. I don't know how bad they are. I mean, you look at the league table and they're the worst team in the division, fair enough. But, you know, they might, who knows, they might be up for the game because they've got nothing to lose. They're already down. And like David said, I'd take a point right now based on the performances that we've seen recently.
Absolutely.
So, of course we can win. We've got the better team. We've got the better quality. But whether that quality, transferred to that pitch and based on Blackpool's lack of any nervousness, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, and again, we've obviously got Lee Clark, you know, at their helm now, so I doubt he'll be doing us any favours. He'll want to go out with a bang, you know, to secure his position at the club next season. If they actually do have a club and sufficient players to start a new campaign next season, but they're in dire straits. You know, we know that the pitch is in awful state. And you know, again, I believe that the pitch will actually favour them, like you said, Joe. They play on this week in, week out. You know, they're either playing in many games I've seen in recent times. They've actually been competitive. They had the nerve to take the lead away to Ipswich recently, but end up losing that game. But anything can happen. It's going to be. I think I'm fairly confident we can go there and win. You know, I think there might be some changes we need to make with our lineup to have people who are probably better suited to play on that pitch. But again, if Pitt lines the team up in a way that this is probably the easiest of the three games there, get the 3 points, or no worse than getting a point, then you know, then I believe we will survive in this division. But it's going to be a messy game tomorrow. I don't think it's going to be pretty by any stretch of the imagination. We're both in our positions because we haven't got enough points, and we deserve to be where we are, and so do Blackpool. But you know, I look back at the way they played at Craven Cottage last October when they went 2 goals up early on. And even then, you know, yes, we had enough chances to win 3 or 4 games that evening, but we only managed to score 2 goals. And all I can recall is Verotic is no longer with us, wasting so many crosses and opportunities. So let's just hope we can be a little bit more ruthless tomorrow. And we do tend to play away from home in recent times more positively and more efficiently than we do at home. So hopefully that trend will continue tomorrow and we can get much-needed 3 points and start to breathe a little bit more. Better, to be honest. So let's hope that we can get those 3 points back to London. One thing I do want to cover off is, again, it's not just the football pitch that's in decline in Blackpool. It's actually their financial affairs and the fact that they were, not only a few seasons ago, a Premiership team, and in the season they got relegated, they actually got into the playoff final and only lost to West Ham in extra time. So you know, I see replica of Fulham's plight with Blackpool's. You know, what are your thoughts, David, on how, again, we mentioned it earlier, 1 year in football is not very long, and you know, take a few years, Blackpool and Fulham, we've both declined rapidly. We've gone from being Premiership clubs to struggling Championship teams. You know, what are your thoughts? How can a club change so significantly and so quickly in such a short space of time? Anything you want to comment on that?
Well, it's terribly sad for the fans of Blackpool. You have to feel for them. I wouldn't quite put us on the same level because, obviously, you know, they had their brief sortie in the Premier League. We actually were just about an established club in the Premier League. And so, in a way, our fall from grace has been a lot worse, really, because we'd made it. We'd got through that kind of first or second season wobbles that you sometimes have. And we were set up and we were, like, doing really well. We had a settled side. We were finishing reasonable positions. We were selling out our capacity every week. It was all looking rosy for us, whereas they kind of are up and down. And you know, it's sad for them though, because clearly there have been a lot of issues with the way the club has been managed and run. From, I mean, and I don't mean in the team respect, I mean from above, from the board. You just got to be feel sorry, because you know, we're really hurting now at Fulham, and so you must, you know, they must be hurting as well.
Exactly. It is a very sorry state of affairs. And you got, David, you on the last show, you mentioned the fact that you know we should have gone out there, win against Wigan, win against Rotherham, to actually, you know, encourage more season ticket sales. But you know, the Blackpool fans, you know, are staying away in their numbers. They're demonstrating outside the ground. And again, this is in 3 seasons ago, 4 seasons ago, they were a Premiership team. They reached Wembley and unfortunately lost to West Ham in the playoff final. And you know, look where they are now, in third tier of football next season. They'll be lucky, unless they change their own or sell the club, that they'll probably won't have a squad of players who can actually kick off the next campaign. Very, very sad. It's just we're not in that position, like you say, but again, there's echoes of similar decline in our perspective. We've just fallen from grace so rapidly, and it's just it's heartbreaking for all long-established fans and for the new Fulham fans in recent years. So, okay, interesting take there, David. Thank you. Joe, I'm going to go over to you. Let's just focus a little bit more about, you know, we're saying we believe we can win the game tomorrow. What changes would you like to make to our formation and possibly our lineup to give us that better opportunity to grab the 3 points?
Well, based on their pitch, I think it's going to have to be pretty basic stuff. You would think that players like Ruiz and you know, people like that wouldn't, you know, necessarily, you know, do well on that pitch. Yeah. Like I said earlier, they're used to it, so they'll be able to exploit the playing area. So I suppose maybe Kit Simons will be looking at, you know, a bit more long ball, a bit more, you know, focused on Matt Smith, you know, trying to, you know, negate that pitch and just, you know, a bit more long ball. The one thing I would say is, as you both commented on earlier, where is Fofana?
Mm.
I would like to see him, you know, out on that pitch on Saturday. I don't know what he's done wrong. Obviously, the midfield hasn't worked for a number of games. Yeah, I'd like to see him maybe start.
Okay, interesting there, Dave.
It's not going to be pretty, let's put it that way.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's this is it's definitely a Route 1 type of game. It's not for the purists tomorrow. This is probably...
Yeah.
Unless we get a cracking scoreline or a very high-scoring game, it's a typical Premiership game where Fulham will be last on the television if we had been in the Premiership. So, David, over to you. Anything? What would you like to see Kit changing to meet the poor pitch, a poor Blackpool team? And do we go more positive and play, you know, potentially a 4-3-3? I'm just throwing it out there. Something a little bit different. Has Kit got it in him to change? And change his formation and tinker with the side again. What are your thoughts?
Well, he seems to be doing a good job of that anyway, to be honest with you. There's been more and more tinkering, I think, as we've become less settled. So, you know, it could easily be a bit of bingo tomorrow. But I don't know. I mean, the only comparison I could make was I went to the Sheffield Wednesday match and the pitch was pretty awful. But in wide positions on one side, it wasn't as bad. So... if that's the same at Blackpool, I don't know, then he maybe, you know, wants to utilise that, because otherwise you just end up with, you know, a scrap in the middle of the park. It all depends whether he's just going to play two banks of four and lump it forward for Smith and try and, you know, do what he did against Wigan, really, be a defensive setup, which isn't always the best way. Sometimes, you know, you need to attack to defend, but it's just the fact that the lack of people we have who can run with the ball and press, and on that pitch it's going to be difficult anyway. So I think we need to play a physically strong side, really. We can't beat them with pace, we can't beat them with skill and dribbling, we're going to have to try and beat them with strength, out-muscle them.
Okay, no, I think that's the right thing to do. We've got, you know, again, Smith obviously will play up there. Again, I'd potentially like to see Roddy Egan maybe potentially given some game time, but again, his days at the club are probably numbered. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what lineup he puts out there, David. And I'll go back straight to you. Obviously, you like, you're a big fan of predicting the starting lineup and trying to see how close you can get to Kit's lineup. So, if you were Mr. Simons, what team would you put out tomorrow? Or what?
I mean, this is very difficult because Simons will probably go and pick all his favourites again, which, you know, I mean, I want to see Ashley Richards out of the team. I don't see what he's offering at all, but I'm sure Simons will be picking him again. I think, you know, I would actually rather, and this isn't because, you know, Mike, Greg and myself are quite friendly, but I think I would rather see Grimmer in the side than Ashley Richards at the moment. At least he does try and get forward. He's not, you know, the finished article by any means. But I have a feeling for myself, I would be tempted to start also people like Hoogland in there as well, because he does offer a bit of a physical presence. It's a little bit kind of, you know, elementary football sometimes with him, but he does run around and makes an effort. And I think it's going to be, you know, players like that, really. I don't want to be seeing, the people I don't want to be seeing are people like Sean Kavanagh, because he's lightweight and I think the game will pass him by. You need people who can get stuck in on this pitch. So, I mean... the question is, does he bring back Hutchinson or does he bring back Bodaroff? Does he keep it the same at the back? Obviously, we're assuming that there's no injuries that we don't know about there. But I would say otherwise. I would bring Jack Grimmer back in at right back. I would drop Ashley Richards myself. I'm sure Kit won't do that. I think on the balance of probability, I would keep Turner and Byrne because they've played the last couple of games together, and Husband because he's certainly been better. I think, to be honest with you, in terms of left midfield, I actually would probably bring Staff Leaders back in because he offers a much more physical presence than playing someone out of position or by playing Kavanagh there. So I'd give Staff Leaders a go. He should be quite fresh. And between him and Husband, they should offer some solidity and a bit of thrust down that side. On the right, I would actually play Tim Hoogland because I think he actually did a better job on right midfield than Tunnicliffe did. In the middle, I would play Scott Parker. Of course, you've got to play him. If he was fit, I would play Fofana because he offers something different. He's a bit unpredictable, but I'm not sure if he's fit. I can't see why he hasn't been there at all. So then it's just a toss-up, really, between either Guthrie or Tunnicliffe as to which one you play in there. Guthrie is meant to be the better passer, but he wasn't so good the other day, and this isn't a passing pitch, but he does have the experience. So I would just favour him slightly over Tunnicliffe. So Tunnicliffe and Park in the middle, Hoogland and Stafford is wide. Yes, that is a bit of a Wigan the second with fullbacks there, but I think we need that strength, really. Then Smith and McCormack up front. Hugo can't control the ball very well on good pitches, so I would go against that one up front, to be honest with you, much as, you know, he's not had a game recently. And it's funny for you, because obviously you weren't his biggest fan, Emilio, so no, it's quite surprising and refreshing, I suppose. Quite refreshing to hear you suggest that, but no, I'd stick with McCormack and Smith. I think Smith is a given on a pitch like this, really.
Okay, good. Thanks for that, David. So, I certainly agree with Grimmer. Bring Grimmer back in for Richard. Richard offers nothing, you know, very, very uncompromising, nothing spectacular, unspectacular. I think is the adjective, Joe, you often use with Richard. I personally would actually like to bring Hutchinson back. You know, I was surprised he didn't start on Wednesday night, and I think we're not physically strong enough in the central defence. I actually think Hutchinson hasn't been our worst defender this year in 2015. I actually think he's probably been the most consistent. Fortunately, he got sent off against Huddersfield, but he hasn't been able to break into the team. But I think that's a consequence of the red card, not because the other guys are playing better. So on a dodgy pitch, I think you need someone a lot stronger. I'm maybe a little bit nervous about Byrne with his lanky legs, maybe, you know, sliding in, you know, losing his balance. I actually would stick my neck and I'd put Hutchinson there, and I think he gives a more physical presence and feels a lot more stronger, but I doubt Pitt Simons will change it. But, you know, that's my potential controversy, but it'll be interesting to see what some of the fans think about bringing back Hutchinson, who I feel is actually a stronger presence and actually has redeemed himself after a very disappointing start to the season. Your midfield, you know, I think you're pretty much spot on. I don't think you're far off from my potential lineup. So, Joe, rather than actually asking you to nominate your starting 11, let's quickly go on to the prediction. So we've gone through we have the capability of winning the game. Are you going to stick your neck out, Joe, and predict a win?
Nope. No, I'll I'm going to predict a pretty boring 1-1.
Right, okay.
I think Blackpool, with nothing to play for, with no pressure on them, I would assume they will know how poor we're playing, how low in confidence we are. Lee Clark will put them out there and say, go for the win. I think they'll score against us, but we'll score as well. But I don't think, you know, we've got the nous, even against the lowest team, to win. I think we can if we play well, but we've not been playing well. On paper, we should beat them. But the way we've been playing, and we've seen it with our eyes in the last three, four games, we've not been playing well. So, 1-1.
Okay, interesting. I'm predicting a 2-1 win. So most people who know me will know that I'm a positive person, optimistic. I still felt that at halftime that we could have got something from the Rotherham game, if not a win, and we actually got that. So I'm actually confident enough that we'll actually surprise many of our fans and actually go out there and win a not pretty game 2-1. So, David, your prediction?
Well, I'm exactly with you, actually, Emilio. I predict a 2-1 win as well, but unfortunately for Blackpool, because I can just see the way we've been going, I can see this being the ultimate kind of icing on the cake for this terrible run we've been in. But I'm also saying that because I've been shockingly wrong on a few, like the Derby one where I said we're going to be stuffed and we went out and beat them. So I'm saying it in the hope that I'm going to be terribly wrong as well.
Okay. That's interesting. They've all got mixed, you know, one draw, one home win, one away win. So someone's obviously going to be right come 5 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. So let's see. So thank you, guys. Thanks for that prediction and thoughts on tomorrow's game. So we've only got just under 5 minutes to go, so I do want to quickly cover one more new feature. I just want to take a sample set of questions that the fans on the Facebook site have asked and want to your opinions, guys. So I've done a draw from the hat, picked up a few questions, and I'm going to ask the first one to you, Joe. So from Noel McCann, asking the question, after that catastrophic first half against Rotherham, will Shaib Khan make the first match of the next season free of charge as an apology to Fulham's fans? What are your thoughts on that? Despite the 15% reduction, well, do you think he'll offer an incentive for non-season ticket holders for next season?
No. when has that ever happened? Wishful thinking, and you know, it's not, you know, it's a nice thought, but it's never going to happen in a million years. Mm. He's running a business, and you know, there's not much time for sentiment in football, unfortunately. It's a shame. I wish there was, but that's not going to happen.
Okay then, so over to you, David. I've got a question for you from Anthea Evans, asking, we talk about John Tigana, Sam Allardyce, Warburton as our potentially future manager, but she's mentioning Glenn Hoddle. What are your thoughts about Glenn Hoddle? You know, I mentioned him as possibly coming in on a consultancy basis about 3 months ago. What are your thoughts of him being a potential Fulham manager?
I like the kind of the theory of it, because he's associated with being, you know, a good tactical brain, and obviously he was a very flair player. But I'm not sure. I know he was England manager for a while. I'm not sure if he's the right fit for a club like Fulham, to be honest with you. I can't see it happening. I mean, if we were going to think outside the box, I would much rather have someone like Tigana come back, because he at least did have a connection with Fulham, and we saw what he could do. I wouldn't be against Hoddle. I mean, I certainly, in some ways, I like the sound of him more than even like your favourite, old Sam. And I'm sorry, Amelia, I know you want him to come in, but I'm a bit scared of Sam Allardyce, really. And so I wouldn't be against Hoddle, but I just don't know if he's the right fit for us.
Okay, interesting there, say there. I thought he'd be a good fit, certainly from a consultancy basis, about 3 months ago when things weren't going too well. We just needed a bit of stability, a bit of experience alongside Kit, when, you know, obviously everyone wanted Kit to stay long-term as our manager, but unfortunately they didn't go down that route, and they brought in Kerbishley, and, you know, again, we're not necessarily seeing any evidence of what value Kerbishley is bringing to the team and the lineup. So thanks for those thoughts, David. I've just got, we've only got one more minute, so last question is actually from James Doughton. Go over to you, Joe. Do we need to look at Premier League players to get us back to the top flight? If so, anyone that you would potentially realistically like to sign? Question about youth versus experience, or possibly both.
It's going to be hard for me to pick a player, you know, off the top of my head, really. Yes, you may need some, you know, one or two ex-Premiership players for the experience, but you also need a lot of you know, Championship players who've been there and done it, and that's been the problem with us, especially at the early stages of the season, where we had a bunch of you know, youngsters playing for us with no experience whatsoever, and we've really only got, you know, half a side who know this division. So you really, rather than, yeah, of course, you know, if you can pick up one or two Premiership players, they're probably going to have to be on loan.
Sorry, Joe, I've got to crack on there. I've got to, any other thoughts? We've got to answer the question quickly before the end of the show. Another 10 seconds.
Right. Well, I can't think of any player off the top of my head. No.
Okay, then, guys. All right, well, thank you very much for your time. We've obviously had 90 minutes on the show. Thank you, David. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Noel McCann, Anthea Evans, James Doughton, for your questions. It's been a very excellent show. Thanks for co-hosting with me. So I've enjoyed my time here today. So I'll be back again on Sunday to discuss the match against Blackpool. So thank you, guys. Have a good evening, and we'll speak soon. So thank you, listeners, and hope you enjoy the show. Good night.
Okay.
Thanks, David. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, guys. See you, Joe. See you, Emilio.
Yep.
Don't forget to listen in on the TuneIn app, which you can get on Android.
Come on, Fulham. 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 the cupboard, you boys and girls. London calling, now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania, the